This is the Southwest Christadelphian Bible School, the 8th of July, 2015, Class 3. Our speaker is Brother Stephen Hornhart, the Salisbury Legion, Adelaide, Australia. His theme is Come and See, Witnessing for Christ. Today's title is, And There Was a Great Earthquake, The Prayers of Saints Answered. Brother Steve.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters. Nice to be with you once again as we commence our third study together under the general theme, Behold. No, it's not Behold, I Come. That's another thing we do in other places. Come and see. If we launched into that one, we'd take up 3 hours rather than make up the last 10 minutes. Now, brothers and sisters, welcome to the theme, as it should be, Come and See, Witnessing for Christ. Now, we have a real challenge before us over these next two studies, the study today and the study tomorrow, because we're going to be looking at the sixth seal. Now, the sixth seal, of course, is the last six verses of Revelation 6, but that's an overview. To get the detail of the sixth seal, that is the last six verses of chapter 6, we need of necessity to go into chapter 12. Because chapter 12 is the detail of the sixth seal. So we need to put those two chapters together to further understand the detail that is there. Now, as we put our toe this morning, and that's all we'll do, we'll put our toe into Revelation 12 this morning, and then tomorrow's study, we're going to put both feet in chapter 12, and we're going to walk through chapter 12 and really unlock the significance of this pivotal chapter, the war in heaven, and Michael and his angels fought with a dragon and a woman clothed with the sun, and all of those amazing symbolic statements that are written in chapter 12 for us. Now, when we do go into chapter 12, of course, one of the major centerpieces of chapter 12 is the great red dragon. But, of course, in chapter 12, the dragon changes. So we don't have one dragon, we have two. Now, we need to know why the dragon changes, how the dragon changes, and when the dragon changes. More about that a little later on. To add further challenge to chapter 12, we don't just have one woman, the woman clothed with the sun, the moon under her feet, around her head a garland of 12 stars. We don't just have that one woman. You see, in chapter 12, another woman appears and peels off from this woman who is clothed in the sun and has the moon under her feet. So another woman peels off and flees into the wilderness. So you've got two women. Or no, we haven't, because the woman that peels off and runs and flees into the wilderness is made up of two women. So we don't have two women in the apocalypse, we have three. So when we go into chapter 12, two dragons and three women. Now we need to uncover that and really open up this chapter. Now let's add further challenge to Revelation 12. Two dragons, three women, and the verses do not run necessarily chronologically. So typically of the apocalypse, in chapter 12, we have a verse that thrusts us into the future and then brings us back and then shows us the detail as to how we got there in the first place. So the order of the day for today and tomorrow is coffee, coffee, coffee. All right? So make sure you have a super duper double strength, whatever you have in Texas with respect to coffee, so that we can get through these sessions without our heads spinning unnecessarily. All right. Now, where we've been, brothers and sisters, thus far, is we have been walking through these, well, first five seals. And we did open up our studies with the 84-year window of the bow benders as they went forth conquering and to conquer, bending their tongues and sending out the sweet words of the covenant of God, establishing a foothold in the, well, relatively peaceful arena of the pagan Roman Empire. But that peace, politically and militarily and economically, would not last because the Roman Empire would be plummeted into 31 years of civil war. and those who boasted in the Pax Romana with themselves flashing those Machairas, those assassin's daggers, they would take away the peace from Rome, and rivers of blood through Rome, and 2,000 people a day perishing. Awful, awful bloodshed. And the empire would get worse as we moved into the third seal, the Black Horse period, those 24 years of intense taxation and awful famine. But we were encouraged, because in the third seal, the record says, and the judicial voice of taxation went out among the four living ones. And we were encouraged, therefore, that our brothers and sisters were all over the empire as a direct result of the bow bending of the first seal. What a wonderful encouragement that is, brothers and sisters. Well, it got worse. We then went from the Black Horse period, where we had awful taxation at the beginning with Caracalla. And then when Severus Alexander, the 17-year-old, came on the scene, he reduced taxation to 1/30. Don't act unjustly by the oil and the wine. And that happened at the end of that 24-year period. Well, we then plunged into this awful pale horse period where death and disease and famine and the beasts and the sword, the great Thracian sword, was to wield its effect, and half the empire would perish, and 5,000 a day would perish in the streets of Rome. And then we come, brothers and sisters, to our fifth seal, the 8-year persecution, where our brothers and sisters cried from under the altar, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on those that dwell upon the earth?" Now, we made the point about Diocletian, albeit very briefly, too briefly, because I cut inadvertently 10 minutes out of our time. However, we talked about Diocletian being the last emperor of the fourth seal. He would also be the first emperor of the fifth seal. Now, you notice that chart there, that Diocletian, although he began the awful persecution upon our brothers and sisters, goaded by Galerius, we'll look at him in a moment, although he instigated that awful persecution that would go those 8 years from 303 to 311, he nevertheless did not complete the reign of that whole period during the fifth seal. For you see, Diocletian became ill. He abdicated from the throne in 305, and after him would come six emperors, then five, then four, then three, then two, and then one. And we're going to look at how that takes place so that we get our head around this sixth seal and the 12th chapter of the book of Revelation. So, brothers and sisters, let's pick up the threads of our study that we entered into yesterday. And we left the words of our brothers and sisters in verse 10, crying with a loud voice, saying, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell upon the earth?" And we made the point, very briefly, that they call God a despot. The only place where the Greek word despotes is used. Imagine calling God a despot. Why here? Why is it singled out in this particular text? Well, you see, brothers and sisters, it was there for a reason, to show a contrast with another despot, that man there, Diocletian. He was a despot to rival any despot that ever sat upon the throne. And Diocletian, brothers and sisters, was a man that was absolutely determined not to let a thug with a sword take his empire. He was absolutely determined that no rich man would come along and open his wallet and say, "I'm going to buy you out." He was determined that no crazed mob would storm his palace, and therefore he turned his palace into a city. And if you ever gained audience with this despot, brothers and sisters, not like other emperors before him who wore the lorette, this man wore the diadem. And he wore long flowing robes. And when he walked through his palace, he walked like this. And when people looked at him, they said, "Is he Roman? He looks more like a Persian king." And that's the That's the impact that he wanted to show others. And if you had opportunity to have audience with him, unlike other Roman emperors, where you'd come to your emperor, you go down on your knee, you'd thump your chest, you'd stand up, you'd look at your emperor as you step back, not this man. If you gained audience with him, he would absolutely demand that you prostrate yourself 3 times on your face, flat before him. And when you got up, you dared not look him in the eye. He was a despot and demanded absolute subjection to him. And therefore the hubbub in the villages and in the provinces and in the marketplaces and at the stalls, the hubbub was, who is the true despot? The Lord God, holy and true, or Diocletian, unholy and untrue? And there were our brothers and sisters crying to God, their only true despot, crying to God to say, remove him. He's trying to take our hearts. He's trying to take our minds. But we will never leave you. We will never forsake you. You only are our true despot. You see why, brothers and sisters, that word is placed there? In comparison to this man, what an encouraging thing that our brothers had the faith and the courage to stand against that man. We don't know what it's like to live under rulership, despotic rulership like that. But they did. And therefore they cried, how long? And God said, you don't have to wait long. You don't have to wait long. The angels are moving. They're working frenetically on your behalf. And very soon there's going to be relief. And very soon that question is going to be answered. It will be answered only temporarily. The greatest answer is how long is going to be fulfilled, brothers and sisters, when you and I, as the sickles of Revelation 14, as the angels that go out of the temple of God, hearing the angel coming out of the altar saying, thrust in thy sickle, when you and I go forward as the sickles of God and reap the vintage of the earth, then that question will be answered in all its fulfillment. But for now, temporarily, our brothers and sisters would receive relief. And it would come, brothers and sisters, in this wise. Now, what I want to do to set the scene, to show you how our brothers and sisters experienced relief as a result of that cry, I want to just walk you through a little word picture of history for a minute or two, and just set the scene for launching in to the sixth seal. Well, there's Diocletian, the great despot, and we are 303 AD. Now, what happened, as we said before, brothers and sisters, when Diocletian abdicated in 305, there were 6 emperors ruling in his stead. Now, here are 5 of them on the screen. The first one, of course, is Constantius. He was the Augusti in the West. He was Constantine's father, pro-Christian. There was another emperor that was ruling in Rome. His name was Maxentius. He hated the Christians with a passion, and he was pro-pagan, very much pro-pagan. There was another Caesar over in the East. His name was Licinius, the brother-in-law to Constantine. Well, at the moment, he was sort of pro-Christian. Well, let's say at the moment he was pro-Christian. He's going to change. There was another emperor over in the East who was absolutely pro-pagan, and he was Maximin, not to be confused with a great Thracian giant of the fourth seal. Maximin hated the Christians. In fact, this man hated the Christians so much. The awful things that he did to the Christians were so bad, on his deathbed, he pleaded for mercy. He was smitten with nightmares, horrific nightmares, of what he'd done to the Christians, this Maximin. The Augusti in the East was the man Galerius, who was responsible for goading Domitian into getting rid of the Christians. So you have an Augusti in the West and an Augusti in the East. And these others were the junior Caesars. Well, let me tell you, some of them didn't see themselves as very junior at all as they started to revolt with one another. Well, brothers and sisters, Galerius did not like Constantius because Constantius was pro-Christian. So Galerius determined to kill Constantius. Never had the opportunity, because Constantius died. And when Constantius died, the fervour and enthusiasm of the Romans in York in England put Constantine in his place. It was Galerius' job to choose who becomes emperor. Not Roman soldiers. But in their violent enthusiasm, Constantine sent an apologetic letter to Galerius and said, look, I do know it's your job to nominate Caesars, but my men were so enthusiastic I had to go along with their request. So Galerius now thought, well, I couldn't get his dad, so I will destroy Constantine. And he determined to do that. But Galerius did not get his way because Galerius died. We're going from 6 to 5 to 3. For you see, brothers and sisters, the angels must work because there must be 3 emperors in the Roman Empire as we open up Revelation 12. Because in Revelation 12 we read words like, and the dragon with his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. There must be 3, a third part, you see. So the angels are removing these emperors. Now we're 4. And what we find, brothers and sisters, Licinius is doing his thing over in the east, and so is Maximin. But Constantine now knew that if he did not defeat Maxentius in Rome, then Constantine's life was in jeopardy. So Constantine had to move with celerity, and he had to take Maxentius out before Maxentius moved his forces against him. And so down came Constantine into Rome. Well, he came to the Milvian Bridge, about 8 miles out of Rome, and the greatest battle of Constantine's life, where he defeated the pagan Maxentius, and now Constantine became the emperor of the West. He still got to deal with Licinius and Maximin in the East. That will take place a little later, and pick that up, God willing, tomorrow in our studies. Constantine is in now Rome and ruling as the emperor of the West. It is now 312 AD. Our brothers and sisters in the fifth seal cried, how long? Now here's the answer. For you see, in 313, an edict was put forth, and it was between Constantine and Licinius, both came together in this instance, and drafted the Edict of Milan, which allowed religious toleration and freedom both to Christians and pagans alike. How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell upon the earth? There was, in measure, a token of that fulfillment. God had not forgotten them, nor had he abandoned them. That, brothers and sisters, sets the scene for the great political earthquake, the sixth seal, both the last 6 verses of chapter 6 and Revelation chapter 12. So, we now begin our journey through the sixth seal. AD 324, we're going to start our journey in AD 312 and move through to AD 324. And this would be the great earthquake that we have alluded to. Well, brothers and sisters, we pick up the record, Revelation 6. Just going to tap into Revelation 6, then move into Revelation 12. So we read in Revelation 6 and verse 12 through 14. And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake. And the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. And the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her winter figs, when she is shaken of a hurricane. That's the flavour that you get in the Greek, you see. And the heavens departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and every island were moved out of their places. Brothers and sisters, if you thought you were rock solid, immovable in the pagan Roman Empire, then think again. It didn't matter how rock solid you thought you were, nothing would stand with this great political earthquake when paganism would be removed. If you thought you were untouched and you were an island way, way, way out there into the distance, you think again, because this is going to sweep everything aside, because God is at work. And therefore, brothers and sisters, we read that it was, well, an earthquake. Now, we won't look up these quotations. I'm acutely aware that there are some brothers and sisters here and young people that are really, really for the first time dipping their toe into this book, and therefore you might like to write down in your margin Deuteronomy 32 and verse 1, where it talks about a people quake, the earth being people. We know the words, I think, of Isaiah 1, verse 2 and verse 10. Hear ye, O heavens, hear ye, O earth. And God is talking about the rulers and the people, calling the people the earth. So it's not a literal earthquake. This is a political earthquake with the removal of paganism and the entry of so-called Christianity. And it is, brothers and sisters, a great earthquake. Now, there are three great earthquakes in the apocalypse. Now, having a look at this chart, you will see the three great earthquakes. Now, look at the way they are strategically, systematically placed. Our first great earthquake is the removal of pagan Rome. Notice that it is at the end of the sixth seal. The second great earthquake is in Revelation chapter 11. This is the French Revolution. Notice it is at the end of the sixth trumpet. The third great earthquake, of course, is that 40-year period between Armageddon and the beginning of the millennium. This is the greatest political earthquake that would ever be upon this earth. When the kingdom of men, in 40 years, you and I involved in that work, the kingdom of men would be removed in this 40-year shaking. Now look, the word Armageddon is there, but that's not correct. I pointed that out to the artist of this particular drawing here. That's not Armageddon. Armageddon is the last event of the sixth vial. When Armageddon takes place, yes, there will be an earthquake, a literal earthquake. But that's not this third great earthquake. This is a political shaking, as are this one and this one. So that is Revelation 16, the third great earthquake, the 40-year period. Now, brothers and sisters, let's just tidy up a couple of things that we might stumble over and get it clear in our mind. Now, they're the three great earthquakes. Revelation 6, verse 12. Some of you might like to jot that down or mark it in your margins. Revelation 11 and verse 13, French Revolution. And the third great earthquake, Revelation 16 and verse 18, the 40-year period. That is the seventh vial. They are the seven thunder judgments of God, or the third great earthquake. Now, let's just tidy up a couple of things. There are two other occasions in the apocalypse where the word earthquake is used. Let's make sure we don't trip over these two. The only other two places where the word earthquake is mentioned is in Revelation 11, verse 19, and Revelation 8 and verse 5. Brothers and sisters, I want you to turn with me, if you will, to Revelation 11. I want to tidy this one up, just in case we're not sure what this earthquake really is, because it doesn't say a great earthquake, you see. There are only three. So we have in Revelation chapter 11, and we're reading from verse 19. So in verse 19, Revelation 11 is a wonderful chapter. 1,500 years of history in this chapter alone. So Revelation 11 takes us through a sweep of history of nearly 1,500 years. Now we get to verse 19. Revelation 11. And the temple of God was opened in heaven. The temple of God? Brothers and sisters, that's you and me. We are the temple of the living God. There we are, you and I. And we're in heaven. We're in the ruling powers of the political heavens of the world. This is Revelation 14, verse 1. This is the Lamb on Mount Zion with 144,000. So at the end of this chapter, the temple is open and it's in heaven. We are in glory, ruling, but the world is yet to be subdued. Armageddon is past. Now, what do we read? And there was seen in his temple the ark of his covenant. There was seen in the saints the ark. Oh, brothers and sisters, look how this chapter opens up. In verse 1 of chapter 11, we read this. It was given me a reed like unto a rod. The angel stood, saying, Rise, John, and measure the temple, the saints. Measure the saints of God with this chastening rod, this chastising rod. So our brothers and sisters who are called the temple here are going to be chastened or chastised for 42 months, this verse goes on to say. 42 months, 1,260 years of persecution our brothers and sisters are going to suffer. Note this, when the chapter opens with this awful, awful bell and alarm of persecution on our brothers and sisters, the temple, notice in verse 1, is associated with the altar. Sacrifice. So the brothers and sisters are going to be related to sacrifice as they live their life under awful persecution, trying to live godly in Christ Jesus. But the chapter ends not with the brothers and sisters associated with sacrifice. The chapter ends with the temple or the brothers and sisters associated with the ark. Immortality. Now there is an encouragement, brothers and sisters. Don't despair. We may undergo persecution, but don't despair. One day it will go from the altar to the ark. What a glorious thing. Well, here we are in verse 19, and here are the saints ruling in the political heavens, and then we read halfway through the verse, and there were lightnings, voices, and thunderings, and an earthquake. That earthquake there, post-Armageddon, post us ruling in Zion with the Lord Jesus Christ, that earthquake there is the same earthquake as the great earthquake in Revelation 16 and verse 18. It is the same earthquake. I want to make a note there in your margins. See Revelation 16 and verse 18. We're talking about exactly the same time period. But why is it not called great here? Why is it just called an earthquake? Well, brothers and sisters, one of the reasons for that is this. From verse 15 of chapter 11 through to verse 19, we're just given an overview of the seventh trumpet. It's just a brush, a broad brush overview, you see. And that's why the detail does not come out until we go to Revelation 16. Hence, in this broad brush little synopsis, it just mentions this earthquake as an earthquake. Alrighty? Now let's tidy up the other one just to make sure we don't stumble over that other one that we've got there, Revelation 8 and verse 5. We're going to take a little more time on this one, God willing, tomorrow in our study, chapter 8. And certainly we're going to look at all of chapter 8 in our last two studies together. But let's just put our little toe in here and just make sure while we're thinking earthquakes we don't stumble over this. Alright, verse 5, Revelation 8. This is the fifth occasion, the only other occasion of those five that the word earthquake occurs. Verse 5. And the angel took the censer, filled it with the fire of the altar, wonderful verse, more about that tomorrow, and cast it to the earth. Now listen to this. And there were voices, and thunderings, and lightnings. Now let's stop right there. There were voices, thunderings, and lightnings. That was the death of Constantine. A.D. 337. I'll prove that to you tomorrow. 337. You need, if you want to write in your margin, A.D. 337, be careful. It is only attributed to the voices, the thunderings and the lightnings. The death of Constantine. Through Constantine's reign, it was peaceful and tranquil. When Constantine died, it was chaotic. His sons were bickering over this, trying to carve up the land, and there were debates in the Christian world. Is Jesus Christ a man? Is he God? There was all of this infighting, politically and religiously. It was chaos when Constantine died. There it is, AD 337. But when it says an earthquake, that was the result of years and years of this infighting, of these lightnings, of these voices and these thunderings. And when it then says an earthquake, we are now in 361 AD. 361. You've got two time periods in this verse. The lightnings and thunderings was the death of Constantine in AD 337. And in 361, in comes Constantine's nephew, who was a pagan, Julian, and says, well, if that's what you call Christianity, well, all of this stuff, I'm getting rid of Christianity. And in came Julian, Constantine's nephew, and said, paganism is back. So there was a little people shake. There was a little earthquake, and it lasted 2 years. And then Julian was kicked out, and Christianity came back. So therefore, brothers and sisters, we've just covered, I think, those five occasions where the earthquake occurs. All right, we then look now at Revelation 6, very brief overview, and we move then into Revelation 12 to get the detail. Here's the first great earthquake, the political upheaval in the Roman world. And we read in Revelation 6 that the sun would be eclipsed. Well, of course, this was the emperors of Rome who saw themselves as the shining light in the pagan Roman Empire. They would be blackened. The stars would fall from the pagan administration. So this would be the administration, all of those subsets of rulers in the pagan Roman Empire. And then we read the moon would become blood, and this would be the death of the pagan religious authority in the Roman political heavens. But the sun is going to come back in Revelation 12, shining brilliantly. And the moon is going to come back in Revelation 12, and there will be no blood on this moon. So Christianity is going to gobble all this up, you see, brothers and sisters. Now let's look at the link. We've made a comment. We've said Revelation 6 and the last six verses, the sixth seal, needs to be butted together with Revelation 12. Now, where's the justification? Where's the proof to show that? Well, I think we've got some interesting little connections between the last six verses of chapter 6, the sixth seal, and Revelation 12. For instance, in Revelation 6 and verse 12, we read there was a great earthquake. In verse 7 of Revelation 12, we read that paganism is cast out, the dragon, the great red dragon, and we read that Michael, Constantine, and we're going to prove that tomorrow, Constantine, he like God. So the great earthquake of Revelation 6 is the casting out of paganism, the great red dragon of Revelation 12. Then we read in Revelation 6 and verse 13, that the stars of heaven fell to the earth. In Revelation 12 and verse 4, we read that the dragon drew the third part of the stars of heaven. You see, there's similar language. There are connections here, you see. We then read in verse 12 of Revelation 6 that the sun would be blackened and the moon would turn to blood. But in verse 1 of Revelation 12, a woman would be clothed with the sun, and a woman would have the moon under her feet. So there's a connection. And then we read these amazing words, and more about this tomorrow in greater detail, but what we have in verse 16 of Revelation 6, oh, there are people that are crying out and screaming, and they're saying, fall on us, hide us from the face of him, Constantine, that sitteth upon the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. And these are the pagans, brothers and sisters, as we will find out tomorrow. These are the pagans running away and saying, we've got to get away from Constantine. He's marching to war with the sign of the cross. Nobody can defeat him. He's got Christ on his side. Now, that's what the pagans were doing. What were the Christians doing? Well, they were saying, oh, the great red dragon has been overcome by the blood of the Lamb. You wait till we see that tomorrow. It'll make you sick. It really will, brothers and sisters, at how polluted the apostasy became and how wrong they were in their teachings to even imagine the kingdom of God was on earth at the time of Constantine, as they did, as we will explore, God willing, tomorrow. Alrighty. Time is going well. No way am I going to be forgetting that I finish at 12 o'clock today. Will I creep 2 minutes? No, we're going well. All right. Revelation 12, brothers and sisters, let's now do an overview of Revelation 12. Let's do a structure, let's do a scaffold, so you start to get ready for the detail that we're going to share with you tomorrow in our study. Now, there's the King James Version of the Bible, and you won't see the text necessarily, but we want you to see the colours. Now, where is the real thrust of this chapter? Well, it's there in verse 7. There was war in heaven. This is a war, not just one battle. This would be a series of battles that would span 12 years. As one after the other, the emperors just fight one another in the political heavens of the Roman world. There was war in the political heavens of Rome. Michael, Constantine, and his army fought against the dragon, and in this instance, which we'll show tomorrow, that dragon there, specifically, historically, that dragon there was Licinius, the brother-in-law to Constantine. So you could read, there was war in heaven. Constantine and his army fought against Licinius and his army. And Licinius fought and his army, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent. Now that's the main thrust of chapter 12. War for Rome, or in the political heavens. Now, brothers and sisters, there is the great red dragon, or one of the heads of the great red dragon. Now, what I've done is I've placed in the mouth of that great red dragon three Roman emperors who will, in turn, historically, fulfill their role in Revelation 12. Galerius is going to have a part to play in this drama. You see, what we're presented in Revelation 12 is a woman about to give birth to a child, and we have the great red dragon about to devour the child as soon as the child is born, detail of which will come tomorrow. But the dragon that's ready to devour the child, each of those three emperors play a part as the dragon ready to devour the child. Galerius will play his part, Maxentius will play his part, and Licinius will certainly play his part, in fact, the major part in this role. Having said that, you'll see that what I've got there on the screen, in red, we have got coloured in there, brothers and sisters, everywhere where the pagan Roman Empire is determined. Now, look, what I want to do, I want to really encourage you to do this. You don't have to, but if you don't, then you'll miss out on something. And if you do, then you'll be on my side. But I won't make you do it, but I'll stand here and watch. I'm going to give you 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds. Please, if you haven't done this, get out a red colouring in pencil and colour that in. And the reason I want you to do that is because of this. The dragon changes. And if you read chapter 12 and you can't see the two different dragons, you're going to miss the point of the chapter. There's a Christian dragon, and there is a pagan dragon. So we do need, brothers and sisters, to get that coloured in, and I'm going to spend 30 seconds, I've built this into the program this morning, so we do have time, so let's just kind of step back a little and get your colour pencils out, you're ready, if you haven't got one, throw it down to the next person, and let's colour it in, the great red dragon, there in verse 3. His tail, in verse 4, this is paganism, you see. And the dragon there also in verse 4. And then when you come down to verse 7, you've got the dragon twice used. Paganism. You come down to verse 9, the great dragon. Still in verse 9, he, his, and him. And then you've got in verse 10, the accuser. Verse 12, the devil, still in verse 12, he, and in verse 13, the dragon, he, and he. Now, when Constantine takes the whole world in AD 324, he now becomes a Christian dragon. The man-child, Michael, the serpent at the end of verse 14, the serpent at the beginning of verse 15, the dragon, verse 16, the dragon in verse 17, and it even spills down into chapter 13, where the dragon, the Christian emperors in Constantinople, would give authority and power to the bishop in Rome. So the dragon in chapter 13 is the Christian emperor ruling in Constantinople. So that's really important to get that down, brothers and sisters. I'll just give you another couple of seconds. Really encourage you to do that. It'll set the scene, particularly for tomorrow. All right, let's now move on. You'll get these slides, but if you've started that colouring in exercise, that'll be great for tomorrow. All right, brothers and sisters, Rome. Is this Rome? Can we prove it? Have you ever had an interested friend ask you, prove that Revelation 12 and these dragons is Rome? Prove it to me. Where would you go to prove that this is Rome? The seven-headed dragon with 10 horns is Rome. Where would you go to prove that? Any thoughts? Don't be shy. Where would you go? Revelation? Excellent. Who said that? Who sung that out? It was a man's voice. Back there. Was that you, Shannon? Way back there. Was that way back there? Who? Who's that? Who is it? Rick? Is that you, Rick? Okay. Thanks, Rick. You're right. Brethren and sisters, let's go to Revelation 17 and prove unequivocally that this dragon in Revelation 12 is Rome. And when we come to Revelation 17, we've got the scarlet beast. Seven heads, 10 horns, same creature, but it's morphed into a different stage of its development, you see. If you wanted a caption of Revelation 17, notwithstanding all the amazing detail, if you wanted a caption at the top of Revelation 17 as to what Revelation 17 was all about, it could read this: the last 30 years of the existence of a monster who has existed for over 2,000 years. Revelation 17 is all about the last 30 years of this creature. Now, when we come to Revelation 17, we read this. And this is proof to me, brothers and sisters, unequivocally, that we're dealing with Rome. And you need to know that if you're talking with interested friends or young people or brethren and sisters who may not be aware of the detail of this chapter. Now, we're given two ways to prove that this dragon, or this beast, I should say, is Rome. We're given a geographical identification because we read in verse 9 the words that the seven heads represent seven mountains. Now, let's read this together, shall we? Revelation 17. I want to spend 5 minutes, and I've got 5 minutes. No, I haven't got three, but I'll take four. Now, Revelation 17, we read this with respect to this beast. Verse 9. Here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. There are seven kings. Five are fallen. One is. The other is not yet come. When he comes, he must continue a short space. The beast that was and is not, even he is the eight and is the seven, and goeth into perdition. When I first read that, I thought, that's it, I'm going away from the apocalypse, I'm going back to Genesis. No way will I understand that. But you know, brothers and sisters, five are fallen, one is yet to come. When he comes, he must continue a short space. The one that was and is not, even he is the eight and is the seven, and goes into petition. When you get it, you get it. You really get it. Now, I want to show you a very simple way to get that, what appears to be a very complicated verse. But first, we're given the political identification of this creature. Well, the seven heads are seven mountains. Now, many of you have seen this diagram. Here is a Roman coin from the British Museum, minted in 71 AD. John could very well have touched that coin and used it to go and purchase something. 71 AD. And there is Roma. There's a woman sitting in seven hills. Pretty impressive, but you know, that doesn't do it for me because Constantinople sits among seven hills. Other cities sit among seven hills. So that's not really foolproof for me. This is. And there are seven kings. Or there are seven forms of government. John, you know what I'm talking about. John's there in AD 96. Now listen, John. These seven heads are seven forms of government. Five are fallen, one is, and the other is not yet come. So these brothers and sisters who were fallen were the regal form of government, the consular, the dictatorial, the decemviral, and the tribunicial. In 700 BC, little Roma on the Italian peninsula was ruled over by kings. Kings. 700 BC. When Rome became a republic in 500 BC, Rome was ruled over by four different forms of government. I won't go through the detail of the consular, the dictatorial, the decemviral, or the tribunicial. Time is getting away from us. But John was told, John, there have been five forms of government ruling over Rome. John said, yes, I've got it. One is John. So when John was alive, receiving the apocalypse, the imperial system, emperors ruled, you see. One is. There's another yet to come. And the seventh head, or the seventh form of government over which Rome was ruled, were the Goths. In came the Goths, and they ruled for a short time. Now that's the easy bit. Five are fallen, one is, the other has not yet come. But with respect to the Goths, the record goes on to say, when the seventh head comes, that is, the ruling Goths who would rule from Rome, the Ostrogoths under Theodoric, we'll talk more about that in the fourth wind trumpet in our last study, but when the Goths came in, he would continue a short space, and the Goths did. The Goths ruled in Rome for 60 years. And then they were turfed out by Justinian, who was the Christian emperor in Constantinople at that time. Be that as it may, that's the simple bit. This is the tricky bit. When he comes, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into perdition. Are you up for this? Yes, you are. Am I going to force you to go through this? Yes, I am. Am I going to pinch 1 minute? You bet your life I'm going to pinch an extra minute. All right, brothers and sisters, now let's look do the tricky bit. Here we are. Five are fallen. Regal, consular, dictatorial, decemviral, tribunicial. Five are fallen. One is imperial. The other has not yet come, the Goths. When they come, they must continue a short space. Did you hear what I last said? When they come, they must continue a short space. That's the last word I said. Therefore, from that springboard, we take the next verse. John, move over there. You're now in the future with the seventh head. Now, John, look back and read the next part of the verse. The one that was and is not, because I am now here, the head that was and is not, because I'm here, even he is the eighth and is one of the seven. It's pretty simple. There you are. The one that was, because I'm here, I'm now into the future, even he is the eighth head and is a resurrection of one of the seven. And so the sixth head, the imperial system, is coming back. You don't believe that? Have a look as we finish our study, brothers and sisters, at Revelation 13 and verse 3. This is exactly what Revelation 17 is saying. Revelation 13 and verse 3. And I saw one of his heads wounded to death. There it is. One of the heads wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. It's exactly the same. What an amazing thing. So there, brothers and sisters, Revelation 13 and verse 3, coupled with Revelation 17, and that all then falls into play. What an amazing thing. Well, brothers and sisters, God willing, tomorrow in our study, we're going to pick up the story and plummet into Revelation chapter 12 and unwrap all of these amazing things with respect to the two dragons and the three women, and our title will be, And the Woman Fled into the Wilderness. Thank you.